Dans cet épisode, je reçois une femme courageuse et surtout très inspirante, et je suis certaine que vous allez être bluffés par son parcours, car moi-même je l'ai été. Bon, pour tourner cet épisode exceptionnel, il me fallait un lieu exceptionnel. C'est pour ça que j'ai choisi le Hyatt Centric Jumeirah, ici à Dubaï, qui nous accueille dans des conditions absolument incroyables. Vous le savez, hein, l'environnement c'est quelque chose de très important pour moi. Je vous laisse un petit peu découvrir tout ça. Regardez la suite. Magnifique, la terrasse incroyable, la vue imprenable sur Dubaï, tout ça à deux pas de la mer. Sans parler des installations de l'hôtel, mais surtout de toute l'équipe qui est au petit soin depuis qu'on est arrivé, qui est vraiment super gentille, super attentionnée. Honnêtement, on a un service 5 étoiles et vous savez à quel point c'est super important pour moi. Donc je suis non seulement très heureuse, très honorée, mais surtout très fière de faire ce partenariat avec un si bel établissement qui est le Hyatt Centric Jumeirah. Si vous comptez vous aussi venir à Dubaï, eh bien n'hésitez pas à checker la barre de description, je vais vous mettre tous les détails. Et croyez-moi, vous ne serez pas déçus. Bon, sans plus tarder, je vous laisse découvrir mon entretien avec Amna El Koubaïsi. So Amna, you are the first female Emirati racing driver to compete and win a Formula 4 at just 19 years. And you are now racing in Formula 1 Academy, the new all-female racing series, right?
Yes.
So many first times and great victories when you are only 23. Amna, when you start something, you want definitely to be the first, which I really admire. I would love to know, where does this mindset come from?
So first of all, thank you for having me. For me, it was just I wanted to try something I loved. So I was doing gymnastics at first and I didn't really enjoy it. I did it for 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yes, for 10 years. And I was always every day in the gym, training 6 hours a day. I reached the elite level. And I didn't enjoy it because the competition was once a year and it's not my thing. I wanted, you know, to compete all the time. So my dad was racing when I was 9 years old. And he would bring his friends, the mechanics, the engineers, his teammates over to the house for dinner, and I was surprised that they were talking about racing outside of the track. And me and my sister, because we did gymnastics together, we never really spoke about gymnastics, you know, about the athletes or the competition outside of the gym. So I was like, you know, he's very passionate about it, and I want to find this passion as well. So I was talking to my dad and I told him, you know, I want to start racing. And then he was like, oh, you want to start racing? Are you sure? I was like, yes, I want to start. And he put me in karting when I was 14. And
then 14?
Yes. And that's when I started to fall in love with the sport.
What did you feel the first time when you were on track?
The first time, honestly, I was very scared. I didn't know how the kart, I didn't know how to control, you know, a vehicle. It's my first time, you know, driving on a street circuit, on a road, controlling a vehicle. I mean, I'm used to the sand dunes, you know, you don't have to put so much control. There's no grip. You can drift. It's not a problem. But on a karting track, it was completely different, out of my comfort zone. So yeah, I was very scared when I started.
And I guess when you started, you were like, I want to have my dad's opinion. Mm-hmm. What he thinks about it. Am I good? Am I enough? You know, mm-hmm. What was his first impression when he saw you?
His first impression, he was very proud. I mean, he has his daughter that he could, you know, share a sport with. Mm. I mean, every father wants to share something with their children. So yeah, whether it's a sport or a hobby. So he was very happy to share that experience with me. And he would give me advice and tips. But I would say that we never expected it to come this far. We thought, you know, it was just for fun, just to enjoy. You know, I'll do it for a few years and I'll just go back to working a normal job, studying. I don't know. I was thinking to go to Harvard in the U.S. That was my dream. And then it changed over time. So, yeah, we were not expecting this.
So it wasn't really a goal for you.
No.
You just go with the flow, mm-hmm, and opportunities, right?
Yeah, I was just going with the flow, enjoying it. I never expected myself to be good enough to reach single-seaters in Formula 4, then move up to Formula 3. I just thought it was just for fun.
Yeah. I would love to talk about your relationship with your parents, especially your dad, because I am a daddy girl. I have such a great relationship with my dad. I love him so much. And I feel like it's the same for you. What kind of relationship do you have with your dad? And what kind of value he shares with you, which is really important when you grow up as a woman?
So I'm the eldest daughter, so the firstborn.
Me too.
Oh, we're the same.
Yeah.
So it comes with, you know, we have, everything has to be, they want us to be perfect when we grow up.
Yeah.
So I know how that feels.
A lot
feels.
Of pressure.
Exactly, a lot of pressure. So it was from studying and the hobby. So the hobby, it didn't matter to him. Is like racing, that didn't really matter to him. What was very important to him was my studies. Mm. If I never did well in school, he was like, forget about racing. You're not racing this weekend. You're going to focus on this test. And if you do well, okay, then I'll take you back into racing. So it was very important to him. And as well as in racing, once I started moving into single seaters, he was very keen on focus. So he would take my phone during the race weekends. I'm not allowed to have my phone.
Really?
Yes. He would check if I sleep in on time, sleep in the bed early. I remember like he would come in my room, you know, to check if I'm sleeping. Okay, she's sleeping early. That's good. So, but I'm just, you know, pretending, you know, I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
I hear him come. So yeah, it was... But I actually admire the fact that he was very strict on me, because it built me into a better person. I think if he wasn't that strict on me and I just took advantage of everything, taking everything for granted, I wouldn't have evolved and become a better racing driver, athlete, person in general.
Yeah, definitely. But well, in the moment, you're like, oh my God, why my dad is so strict?
Yes,
right?
Yes.
You really learn the lesson after. When you grow up and see how much benefit you have from this education, right?
Yes, I agree.
And I think it's really important. So you learned discipline with him.
Yes.
You are very disciplined woman now?
Yeah, I'm very disciplined. I mean, it took a while for me to become disciplined. I was at an age where I wanted to have fun with my friends. I wanted to go out.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the teenage life.
Yeah.
Very normal, but... At the same time, I was doing motorsports, and my father would tell me, you know, I'm investing, we're having sponsors investing in this and in you, in this sport, and we cannot have you mess around, not focus, not go to the gym. I mean, you can have fun with friends, but there's a time for it, but not all the time. So I used to always want to do it all the time. And he would, you know, give me, you know, there is a balance.
Yeah,
you need to keep a
give
balance.
Me a break sometimes. Yeah. I'm not a robot.
Exactly, yes.
Of course. But I would love to know how a day in your shoes look like.
So it depends really. Like when it's during university week, I usually have university early classes from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Okay.
So
Abu Dhabi, right?
Yes, in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
So after I finish my university classes, I come home, I do my work, my assignments, and then I go to the gym around 4 or 5 p.m. I go stay in the gym for an hour and a half. And then later on, I just built a car, a project car, which is an old Skyline R33.
Wow.
And I would take it out and, you know, test a few things. I go to garages, I buy, you know, some parts for my car. I go to wrap companies, design wraps. So after the gym is where I start using my free time for my car.
This is your hobby right now.
Yes.
You really love the car. What do you like the most about it?
What I love about the car is that it's old, so it's very valuable. It's not made anymore, so everybody wants to buy this car. It's high on demand. And it took me 2 years to get it working. Because it was completely rusted from the inside out. It was in my dad's brother's farm.
Okay.
And it was there for 10 years. And I told my dad, give it to me. I want to build it.
Yeah. And it's a good investment as well.
Yes.
Do you want to sell the car one day?
No. I don't want to sell this car. It's like my baby. It's for me. It's like it represents me in a way, and it's a part of me. So I cannot sell this car.
Oh, interesting. What you say? It represents me.
Yes.
How? What kind of common point you have with your car?
I would say the speed. The valuable parts of this car where you cannot find anywhere. So if you let's say, break a part in the car, you cannot find this part anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's why it represents me. Like, if you break a part of me, you cannot fix it, you cannot replace it.
Okay.
So that's like how it represents me in a way.
Oh, interesting. Really love this metaphor.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful with you. Talk well, not doing something wrong. Right?
Yeah.
Are you a private person?
I'm actually, like, let's say on social media, I'm a private person. I don't show what I do in my daily life.
But yeah, true. Say,
yes.
Yeah. You share the backstage, but you keep private your personal life.
Exactly. And let's say if I met someone, even if it's the first time, I'm like an open book. I tell them everything about me. I share my stories as long as the camera is not there. So I don't like things. I don't like to share things on social media about my private life because it's forever.
Yeah, and you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, it's good, I think, to be careful and aware about our image.
Exactly.
And especially in these days when everybody share everything and it's not good at all.
Yes,
so,
I agree.
Yeah, I really agree, and I have the same vision. Actually, yeah. I don't have any social media myself.
Oh, no way.
No, you can't find me on Instagram. You can't find me anywhere. I have, of course, social media for my podcast and my media. But for me personally, I don't have any social media.
It's actually the best.
Yeah, I feel more comfortable like this.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I feel like I am free to keep what I want for me.
Exactly.
And don't have, you know, I have my boundaries and my private life, and it's very important to me. Yeah.
I think also it's the same with me. If it wasn't for racing, I wouldn't really have a private account. All my social media accounts is public, so it's for like sponsors, fans to engage with. So yeah, if I didn't have racing, I wouldn't have a social media account.
How do you choose what you want to share and what you don't?
So that's a very nice question.
Because I ask this question for myself too. Yeah.
I actually don't really like to share a lot of things. Like, I don't share my friends. I really respect their privacy. I respect even family members. I don't really share my family members' accounts or posts with them because I respect my family's privacy. So I don't want, like, at one point I remember when there was a big article when we were with the King of Spain, and it was all over the news, and people were contacting my cousins because I had them on a post, a really old post on my account. They scrolled and they contacted my cousins and trying to, you know, ask them for my number to talk to them. And so I was.
How do you handle this?
It annoys me because it's like, you know, you cannot just go to somebody who's related to me and try to contact them and harass them in a way. So it really bothers me. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, this is a lesson. Don't post your family members who don't want to be contacted by journalists or media experts or whatever. So I just keep things just me on my account. Mm.
And tell me, Amna, I feel like at the same time, when you don't share personal stuff, it's more difficult to have sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, they really like to see your lifestyle, your friends, your private life. And this is easier to have sponsors and partnership.
Yes.
Did you leave that?
In the beginning, I never really had a story to share. It was, you know, the normal, I got into racing because of my dad. And that was basically my story. But nobody really knew the behind the scenes of what I do because I never really expressed them on social media. I don't want to be that person who's like, oh, you know, I'm like this. You have to feel sad for me. You have to support me. I'm not this type of person. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then it's all written. You know, it's in God's will.
Yeah.
So, So I actually recently had a post from Hypebeast that was, I think, a year ago, 2 years ago, and I had Bella Hadid. She reposted me. Lewis Hamilton. So it was a very big exposure from Hypebeast. And I never expected it because they asked me, you know, through email, can you answer these questions? And then we will post you. And I said, oh, okay, no worries. I answered. I sent them pictures. And then the next day I found myself, I had 100,000 followers out of nowhere. And then I had 2 sponsors. So it really helped me, that exposure. But then after COVID came and I had no sponsors.
Yeah, but as you said, exposure comes with opportunities and sponsors.
Exactly. Yes.
This is something very difficult to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I am asking you, how do you choose what I want to share, what I want to post? I mean, did you feel like now your audience is growing bigger and bigger? You have much opportunities with sponsors?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of opportunity since I signed with Red Bull.
Yeah, congratulations for that.
Thank you so much.
This is a big, huge opportunity
for
you.
Yes, it's very big. I mean, I represent Visa Cash App RB, and that gave me a lot of exposure. I had a lot of sponsors interested to sponsor, but since Red Bull already has their own sponsors, we cannot have them have competitors on the car as well. So we're having them as a save for next year or something. So we really got a huge exposure from that. So I think it's the opportunity is a lot of media.
Yeah.
I don't know, some articles as well. I mean, Hypebeast gave me a lot of exposure. I'm also trying a few trends with my sister and my teammate on Instagram, on TikTok. And it actually blew up as well. Some trends we did that was just for fun. And it turned out to be something big and everybody liked it and enjoyed it. So I always try to improvise. I'm not going to go through the sensitive emotional side, but I'll improvise using the fun side, being around my sister, my teammates, something my hobby, my car, something I enjoy to do. So I don't share my personal life, but I share something that everybody else enjoys watching on TikTok or the trends that comes out.
You don't feel like now I have to post this or that because of the sponsor?
No. It's just casual for me. It's just for fun. I don't have a plan for it. It's just, I have an idea. Let's try this. We try it. And we didn't expect it to blow up. And then, let's try this again. Another idea. And then it blows up. So I think everything happens when you're not really focused and throw expectations on it, because expectations lead to disappointment. That's something I always kept in mind.
Yeah.
It's just go with the flow, do what you enjoy, what you like to do, your own idea, your own creativity, without any plan behind it or expectations. And trust me, it's gonna blow your mind.
Yeah, and keep your values.
Exactly.
Keep your work ethic, your own personality. Mm-hmm. And that's why I am very happy to talk about it with you, because I feel like when you do start have an audience on social media, everybody has something to say, to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to share this or that. You have more opportunities if you do this or that. I don't want to do this.
Exactly,
yes. It's not what I am looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. Sometimes I feel like it's difficult. You know, it's like, okay, you have to have this distance and just be comfortable with what you do and who you are.
Exactly. I agree.
So important.
Yeah, to be true to yourself.
Yes. When you started racing driving, it was very new for you and for so many people around you. Tell me, did you discover something that really surprised you and that not many people know about racing driving?
Actually, what surprised me was the physical part.
Really?
Yes. It's very physical. Even in karting itself, which is smaller, less speed, it's very physical. I mean, we race also in a heat for 25 minutes nonstop. You need a lot of endurance. And then when you move into single seater, the physical level gets higher. And there is a lot of stress on your neck, on your shoulders. We don't have power steer, so all the effort comes from your arms. And if you're not physically prepared, it affects your focus. So you won't drive properly, you won't be fast enough, because all you're thinking about is, I'm really tired, I want to pit, I cannot drive anymore. So yeah, the physical part is what surprised me the most.
And what do you do to be like always on high level in this physical part? I mean, I guess you do a lot of gym, mm-hmm. but something else?
So a lot of gym and a lot of neck training.
Neck training?
Yes.
How it does it look?
So we got a harness specified for the neck.
Okay, okay.
So yeah, and we basically put some, it has a band.
Okay.
And attached to the harness. So it's like 5 kg, 2 kg, you can do it up to 7 kg. And you have to move your neck and you do it a few times and you repeat it and then you turn around, you try the other side and work on different types of muscles around your neck. Because the neck is the huge part of racing, especially like the long corners when you have to hold the car for a long time, your neck is like, and the helmet is heavy. So, yeah.
So you do it every day?
Every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Every day?
Every day.
My God, lot of messages as well? Spa, wellness.
I wish I never had the time.
Really?
Really.
I think it will be great for you.
Yeah, I need it. Honestly, I've been traveling for like 2 months, nonstop, traveling from a different country, moving hotel to hotel. It was too stressful.
Tell me, Amna, I would love to know how a day looks like for a racing driver. Bon, petite pause très rapide pour vous présenter notre partenaire, le Hyatt Centric Jumeirah. Et pour ça, j'ai rencontré la directrice de l'hôtel à qui j'ai posé quelques questions. So, the specificity of this hotel is that the majority of the team is female, right?
Yes.
So, Britta, why did you make this choice, which is very interesting?
Yeah, basically we made this choice because we thought about it. We want to be a launch pad for female leadership. Okay. Because at the end, you also have to have a certain pool of talent to send them then out to grow. And we, in general, we wanted to grow the female participation in the workforce. And that's why we really tried to make 100%, but we had 88%.
I would love to know what are the benefits of working with women.
Well, what we observe here is that when you have a majority of women in a room, and I think this is in general always like this when you have a gender which is in the majority, is that we have a female communication. I didn't have done a research or something, but when I asked people, we have some people who are working in two hotels, like cluster teams, and they're also reporting that our communication was very female. But then I would say important is that we should have 50%. So it should not be a majority, we should have equity on all levels.
Tell me, Amna, I would love to know how a day looks like for a racing driver.
Ooh, a day. So basically, the night before, we sleep early. We eat a lot of carbs. So pasta, bread, rice, meat, chicken. We eat a lot of carbs. And then the next day, we wake up at around 6 a.m.
Okay.
We have breakfast. We have something very little, not too heavy. So eggs, beans, fruits. For me, I like to have hot dogs, sausages sometimes. And then we head to the track. And we need to be at the track an hour before our session. So to speak to our engineer, to see the team, to be physically prepared. We have a warm-up session with my teammates and my sister. We do a warm-up with the bands, skipping, stretching before we jump in the car, and then we jump in the car, and then we have sessions, 3-hour sessions, and then we have a break, which is an hour break, which is a lunch break. But during the lunch break, I'm with my engineer and I'm talking to him, discussing what we can fix, what we can improve, what I like about the car, what I don't like about the car, and we go through a conclusion, and then we go for lunch, and then we have another 3-hour session, and then after that I go straight to the hotel. I don't discuss anything with anyone and I go sleep.
Wow, yeah. Such a busy day.
Yes, yes.
What is the most difficult in this all training?
So we were in Jeddah a few days ago.
Yeah.
And the most difficult part was the heat.
the heat.
Yes, we had to drive 13 laps in the Jeddah circuit at 31 degrees, and it was so bad. I got out of the car, it's like I took a shower. I'm fully wet. It's disgusting. It's hot. My face is really red. Mm. So I would say the worst part is the weather conditions. So if it's hot, oh my God, it's really bad.
I'm like, when I'm doing nothing in Dubai, I feel hot. Yeah. So I can't imagine how it looks like in Jeddah like this, in this condition. My God.
Yeah, it's really hot.
Yeah, really, really hot. And how many days do you train during the week?
So I train 5 times a day.
Wow.
Yeah, 1.5 hour to 2 hours a day. And yeah, I mainly focus on like my neck. Neck training is the main focus for those 5 days. And then I split like 3 days on arms and then 2 days on my legs. And then the cycle repeats.
I mean, Amna, it's not an easy lifestyle when you are a racing driver.
No, it's not.
It's not. I mean, it's very, you have to be disciplined. You have a structure, a lot of difficulties. What do you enjoy and like the most about it?
What I enjoy the most is I get to drive in extraordinary tracks in the championship. See people, racing drivers, you know, from different parts of the world. I get to meet them. I get to become friends with them. As well as, like, even though the traveling is very stressing, but I get to visit parts of the country I never had the chance to visit before.
Yeah.
So, like, even if it's in the middle of nowhere, it's still so beautiful. And you have, you know, your competitors, even though they're competitors, but they're your friends outside of the track. We get to meet up together, we have dinner together, and it's just, you know, a different atmosphere.
Okay. Maybe you love the thing that it's not a regular life.
Yes.
It's like a special life.
Yeah.
Like we say in French, c'est pas la vie de monsieur et madame tout le monde. You do something special.
Yes.
Maybe this is what you like.
Yeah, something that's outside of what
my outside of life. Our reality.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, okay. I can relate because I also don't like really routine, like always the same thing, the same every day, all day long. But at the same time, I feel like you have a lot of stress and pressure. How did you learn to handle with this?
So when I first got signed with Red Bull, I thought, you know, oh, I have a Red Bull logo in my car and I need to prove myself. I need to be the best. I need to be the top. But I had my team manager. He sat with me and he spoke with me and he told me, listen, pretend your car is just a normal black or white car, no livery, no Red Bull logos, nothing. And you're just there to drive. He said, just imagine that's the way your car is. And I was like, if my car is like that, then I wouldn't be really stressed. I'm just going to go drive, do my best. And if it's good, it's good. If it's not, then I'll try to fix it from there. And when I started thinking that way, I actually drove much better, more relaxed.
Okay.
Yes. When I feel pressure, I just overdo it. I overdrive. I overdo every corner. I just start overthinking. And it's really bad for my mental health and for me physically, because I start tensing up. So I just, before I jump in the car, I'm just relaxed. I'm like, okay, we're just gonna relax, drive it. We're gonna drive like it's any normal practice day, just here to find corners, try to maximize every corner and just try to improve lap after lap. And boom, we were like really fast. And yeah, I think you have to just take things relaxed.
You talk to yourself?
Yes, a lot. I sit alone and I talk to myself and in my head.
Yeah.
And I would tell
myself. I mean, you can also talk loud.
My teammate thinks I'm crazy. She sees me and she's like,
oh my God.
She's like, are you okay?
We lost Amna.
So, yeah, I just talk to myself like in my head because when she's there, it's a little awkward.
And it helps you.
Yes, it helps me a lot. Talking to yourself, I mean, people look at it in a different way, like, oh, this person's crazy. But in reality, it actually really helps when you just have a conversation with yourself. And it really calms you down. Because if you go talk to someone, they're not really going to give you the same reaction as the way you're talking to yourself. They're going to say something else and it's going to put you down more. So I always enjoy and prefer talking to myself.
I always do that for myself. Always.
We're friends.
Always. I always talk to myself. And sweet word. Yes. Like I'm my best friend, you know? And exactly. Sometimes it could be weird for, you know, people around you.
Yes.
But yeah, this is something, it helps me a lot.
Yeah, I agree. It
more really than helps. Anything.
Yes.
Yes. And maybe also pray. Mm. Faith is a good part
of
our life. I know that. Mm-hmm. I would love to know, what spirituality means to you and how do you live your spiritually in your daily life?
I think for me, faith is so important. I mean, I try my best during a race weekend, even though I have very long hours at the track or busy. I try my best to pray, to do dhikr. I always, you know, say Quran before I jump in the car, Ayat al-Kursi. It's very important to me, and it helps me actually accept things quicker. If something bad happens, I'm more accepting to it and I can move on from it faster when I just say, you know, عَسَى تَكْرُهُ شَيْئًا هُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. So it makes it more accepting for me to move on, as in like holding on and dwelling into it and thinking about it 5 months from now. So it's very easy for me to move on from a specific issue or encounter quickly.
How did you build this spirit? I'm French, so sometimes some words are very difficult for me to say. How did you build this spirituality for yourself? It comes from your parents, your education, maybe?
It actually came from my parents, my father mainly. He always gives us, you know, advice on how, you know, religion is very important and you should stick to it and not move away from it or distance yourself from it.
Okay.
He would give us advice. He wouldn't force it upon us. And we actually witness him as well being very close to the religion. Even my mother, they're very close to the religion. And when you just witness it without being forced upon it, you're like, then it means it's something. It's not a must, you know, like I have to do it because they told me I have to do it. It's when you see them doing it without them telling you to do it, you're like, I should be like that. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be, you know, just sitting on TikTok all day when I can use this time for prayer.
Did you have maybe a very deep spirituality experience that you can share with us?
Yes. So it was during COVID when I lost all my sponsors, I lost everything. And I actually, it was a year after I lost everything and I was just basically not racing for a full year. I went to Mecca with my father and we went to do the Umrah. And I just prayed and I was telling, you know, God, like, I really want to get back into racing. And if anything happens, I would like to also win a few races. I would like to boost up my career and show myself that I'm not as what people think about me, that I'm a really good driver. Because at that time, I used to see comments, really bad comments about me, that I don't deserve to be a racing driver.
Wow.
So I just went to Mecca and I did that small dua, small prayer. And honestly, like 6 months from that, F1 Academy was introduced and it was affordable. And I was like, لا مستحيل هذا دعاء مرة مستجاب. I was
amazing.
Really in shock. And I was like, it does mean something. Like, if prayer and dua بيكون مستجاب, even no matter what, if it goes to God, it's going to be answered.
Wow. And look at you now.
Yeah.
With your Red Bull sponsors.
Yeah.
Formula One, Academy, and everything. Yeah. So yeah, spirituality is a big part of your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. It's
and
a very big part.
Maybe of your success too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is something you discuss with your little sister, Hamda, because she is a driver, a racing driver as well.
Yes. Yeah, I told her about it. I told her I went to Mecca like, and I prayed for this. And I really hope maybe, inshallah, if in God's will, I will come back and we will maybe even compete with one another. And she said, oh, really? Because she didn't go to Mecca. It was just me and my dad.
Mm.
And she wanted to go to Mecca as well. We were just in Jeddah, but we were stressing. We didn't have time. We have to come back home and we had some work to do. So inshallah, maybe when we go back for the race weekend, she will have the chance to go to Mecca. But yeah, I told her, if you visit Mecca, it's literally a different atmosphere. My heart was at peace. Like, I've never felt this type of energy in my life when I entered Mecca. So I was like telling her how amazing it was, and she wants to go now. And she's very also deep in her faith. She prays, she makes dua as well. She's more emotional than I am. So she always, when anything affects her, she goes straight to prayer.
Okay, so, okay. Yeah. Oh, she's more emotional than you. Okay. Yes. Maybe because she's younger.
Maybe, yes.
Too.
Yeah.
Experience, yeah, comes. So after that, I mean, yeah. No, it depends of personalities, yes. I would say, of course. Yeah. And I would love to know if you have like rituals when you are on the track. I mean, before go on the track. And yeah, if you have some things you do every time.
I don't really have a ritual, actually. I just appear in track, I do my warm-up. It doesn't matter to me if I jump in the car from the right or left side.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have
because
a ritual.
Because I heard this a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. People have a ritual, but for me, I don't really have a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
I just jump in from any side. I mean, when I jumped in the left side, I won a race. When I jumped in the right side, I won a race. So it doesn't really matter to
yeah.
me.
But you told me about Ayat al-Kursi.
Yes,
is this something you...
Always.
Always.
Yes, this goes without saying always. Before I drive, once I'm in the car, I say Ayat al-Kursi and then I go.
Okay. Because you do something you love and this is so inspiring hear you, listen to you. And thank you so much to share your story with us. But at the same time, you know, Amna, when I did prepare this interview, I was like, this is something dangerous. It could mm-hmm. be dangerous, you know. Mm-hmm. How do you handle with this? Are you aware of this dangerosity of your work?
I actually don't find it dangerous. I find it much safer than driving down a normal road. Yes.
You're right. Good point.
Yes.
Especially in Paris.
Even here in Dubai.
Even here? Really?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Here they're crazy as well.
Okay.
Because when you're racing, you have the safety gear on, which is fireproof racing suit, fireproof racing gloves. You have a helmet. You have you have the belts that are completely pulling you close to the seat. So there's no movement whatsoever. If you get into a crash, everything is made to be crash-proof, so it wouldn't affect you as a person inside the car.
Okay, okay.
We don't have airbags. Airbags can hurt a person, you know, they can have neck problems or something, they can have blisters. Down the road, you go into an incident, you have to wait for the ambulance to come. Over there, the ambulance is already there, they'll pick you up in a few seconds. So for me, I find the racetrack is much safer.
Yeah, I mean, the conditions are safer than the real life. I mean, when you are on the road, as you said, in Dubai or Paris. I feel like the team is very important, people you have around you. How do you choose them? How do you choose the people you want to work with?
Honestly, we get to choose our engineers if we're comfortable with them or if we want to change an engineer. But if we have a mechanic that is going to be with us, we have to learn how to adapt to them. Usually in our team, we're really happy with everyone. Everyone is so kind. Everyone is there to be to make you the best driver you can be. They work super hard. They're there from 5 a.m. in the morning till 1 a.m. at night, trying to fix the car, check if there is any issues with the car. I mean, the team are very dedicated as much as we are dedicated. And if we don't feel good and we, you know, are always negative, this affects the team as well. They become negative and they start, you know, overstressing and panicking. So it's very important. I always tell my sister this. If something is wrong, just speak to the engineer.
Okay.
And don't be too negative about it because that's going to affect the team at the end of the day and it's going to stress them out. So just be calm and it will be fixed. Everything happens for a reason. If it's not fixed now, it will be fixed tomorrow.
A lot of self-control.
Exactly, self-control.
This is something we don't learn
mm-hmm.
at school or in a daily life. How do you learn to be more calm? and peaceful,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And trust people
exactly.
as well.
Yes.
Very yeah. difficult for me to trust people sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. For me as well, it's I don't trust people, but I'm friendly with them.
Okay.
So, but I choose people I trust. So, yeah. But self-control for me, it took me a very long time to develop self-control. I used to get really angry very quickly and I would explode into anyone.
Yeah, this is the Moroccan part yes. of you.
Yes, the Moroccan part, yes, from my mother's side. And then I had to really, you know, try to take self-control, patience. And I really worked hard on my patience throughout the years. And like I said, COVID really changed me as a person.
Yeah. You're still young, Amna. You're only 23 and you have accomplished so many things. I would love to know what is the biggest sacrifice you have made to achieve a goal, and was it worth it?
The biggest sacrifice I did was during my, when I joined the 2018 Italian Formula 4.
Oh, yeah.
I had to miss Ramadan for a whole month, and I had to miss Eid, family gatherings, a lot of things that happened at home, my brother's birthday, my sister's birthday, my dad's birthday. I had to miss all of that while I was abroad racing for the F4 Italian Championship. And I wouldn't say it was really worth it, but I thought that I wasted my time. That's what I felt like. I felt like I didn't really improve throughout the season. I wasn't doing as well as I thought I would be doing. But then the last race of the F4 in Abu Dhabi during the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix in 2019, I won it. And then I was like, okay, then maybe it was actually worth it that I worked super hard throughout those years. And it built me and it gave me that experience and those skills to develop to win that specific race.
Yeah, sometimes results are not coming right now. You have to be patient
exactly,
and
yeah.
wait. And this is also something very difficult to yeah. do in life.
Yeah, we always but want yeah. it right now.
Yes, yeah. yeah, especially now in our day, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did so many things these past few weeks. You were in Japan, in Saudi Arabia. And I would love to know what is the most unexpected thing that happened to you this year? In 2023.
The most, this year, 2024?
Three, because four we are started.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, this past few year.
The past few year for me, the most unexpected thing was the Red Bull call. We had Helmut Marko. He, after the first race of F1 Academy, he called us and he wanted to meet us, who was the CEO of Red Bull.
Okay.
And it was me and my sister. So we went to Austria and we didn't expect anything of it. It was with my dad as well. He said he just wanted to meet us and have a coffee and talk to us. So we went to his office and we spoke a bit. And then he presented the contracts to be signed with them, with Red Bull. And me and my sister, we were there in shock. Like, oh, they want us now. So... even my dad told me, he saw me just grab the pen ready to sign. He's like, wait, we have to read. Yeah. Calm, be calm. I was like, I don't care, I'm going to sign with them.
So it was most serious that you expected?
Yes, it was. Actually, I thought it was just a normal talk. And then he just presented the contracts out of nowhere. And me and my sister were in shock. We were like, oh, we're going to get signed right now. They want us to sign. So,
yeah. This is a real game changer for you?
Yes.
Like, what it changed?
It gave me confidence.
Yeah.
It brought me back that confidence that I'm good enough and I deserve to be racing as much as everybody else. I mean, throughout the years, I used to have, you know, people from different teams, you know, saying that she's very slow. She doesn't deserve to drive. The only reason she's driving is because her dad gives her money to drive, which is the typical stereotype they give about
unfortunately.
Arabs. Yes. So... that was always the case when it came to me racing. But then after the first race in Austria, where I had the fastest lap, I won a race, I was catching everybody else, they were in shock. Everybody was in shock.
Yeah.
So that's when my confidence came back. Because I used to believe them. I used to say, maybe they're right. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm just, like they say, someone who's who has the opportunity to do it. So I'm happy I got that confidence back.
Oh my God, I'm so happy for you and so proud.
Thank you.
And now people behaviors change, yes. Right? How?
It changed that they were wrong.
Yeah.
They were wrong.
What is the happiest moment for you in your life? Something that brings you a lot of joy?
What brought me a lot of joy was the sign with Red Bull. I mean, I think I'm going to be talking about it a lot, but this was a dream of mine ever since I just started racing. I've always wanted to be represented by Red Bull.
Really?
Yes. Since I was a very young child, when I just started racing, I always wanted to be represented by Red Bull. And seeing that dream come true, I had also Red Bull merch in my house. I have Red Bull shirt for the F1 weekend, Red Bull hats, Red Bull everything. I had so much Red Bull. So I was dreaming one day I would have a Red Bull suit.
Amazing.
I swear. And having that happen was the biggest, you know, shock in my life. And I was so happy. I mean, I even cried alone in my room because I was like, this is like unbelievable that it happened, that I was picked to be representing them.
It seems like you did some visualization, right?
Yes.
How does it look?
Ever since I was young, I mean, I took racing as a hobby, but I wanted, you know, to feel special. And Red Bull, I was a big fan of Red Bull.
Yeah. So why are you a big fan of them?
In Formula One, with Sebastian Vettel, Mark Webber, Daniel Ricciardo, and now Max Verstappen. I mean, those drivers were like the biggest, like celebrities to me. I was always starstruck when I see them drive and their helmet designs. And I always felt like Red Bull stood out from other teams. They were always doing something as well with their RB cars when it came to, you know, have you seen the spaceship, the G-Force, where they put the car inside the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they had to change the tires. Yes, they always had to make something different about it.
Yeah, they're impressive.
Yes, it was always impressive when they did the race with the fighter jet. Mm. They were always coming up with really crazy ideas. And I loved that. I was like, I wanted to represent something like that, that do crazy things and always, you know, have success to it. So that's why I really wanted to be like a Red Bull representative.
Okay. And did you meet some celebrities or personalities that really inspired you to do this?
Yeah, I met Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, I saw it on Instagram.
Yes. I had the DHL. They gave me the opportunity to give him the fastest lap award trophy. And I had the chance to speak to him for like 2 or 3 minutes because he had to go for qualifying. And I was talking to him and I was telling him, oh, you know, you posted me during the Hypebeast post and I want to thank you. And he's like, I know it's you. And I was like, oh my God, he knows it's me. And he told me, you know, to keep pushing and to keep grinding. And he's like, we're watching you. And I'm like, oh.
You know what? I watched the series, the show on Netflix, Formula One. I don't know if you did watch it. Formula One series on Netflix.
Yeah, Drive to Survive, yes.
Ah, okay. In France, it's Formula One.
Oh, okay.
Very simple. And it was so interesting, so inspiring. I mean, it's Netflix show, mm-hmm. though, always high quality. But I also learned a lot. And what I really loved about Lewis Hamilton is actually his coach. Mm-hmm. How the name is? I think it will be not performance coach. Mm-hmm. Performance in English?
Yes.
Okay.
Performance, yes.
Performance coach, and she is so important to him. Do you have a coach like her?
We have Red Bull offered us a performance coach as well. Her name is Sarah Harrington, and we met in December. And she's very supportive. She gives us a schedule for training, and she's going to be with us for every race weekend. So she's going to help us mentally, physically.
Yes.
So she's like there with us for the entire weekend.
I'm not a racing driver, but honestly, I need a performance coach every day in my life.
I know. It's like once you get attached to them, you need one now.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like it really helps in a lot of field. I really want to ask you, but it's a little bit personal. So if you feel comfortable with, okay, you can answer, no problem. Mm-hmm. If you don't, no problem, okay? I feel just like I have a successful and talented woman, and I know that you, what you do, it's very difficult, and you have a very busy schedule. And I would love to know if there is a place for a personal life in everything.
Yeah, there is a place for a personal life. I mean, it's just the preparation a month or two before the season starts is when things start getting busy, because now the season is coming in 2 months and we need to start preparing from now. So then during the season, after every race weekend, we have 2 weeks to 3 weeks off. We're not doing anything. Mm. We still have training, but it's not as extensive as the 2 months before.
Okay.
So there is room for a personal life. Let's say it could be in the weekend or once in a weekday, but not every day. So there is a personal life. There is a place for it, for sure.
Okay. And do you think sometimes about your future as, for example, a wife, a mom, or this is something you don't think about and it's okay too?
No, actually, I do think about it. I would love to have, you know, I have a specific age for me, like around 26, 27. I would like to settle down and have kids.
Okay, so in 3-4 years.
Yes, that's what I want, because I don't want to stick to something, grow old, and then I don't have time to, you know, I want to grow with my kids. I want to still be young when I have them, and as I grow, still be young as well. And I don't think, even if I, let's say, settle down and I have a child, that I have to stop. You know, I cannot think about racing anymore. I mean, there's a lot of female drivers who are also mothers racing, and I find that extremely inspiring that they're racing and they bring their kids with them to watch them. It's extremely inspiring, and I don't know how they do it, but they're super moms.
Yes, for sure.
It's incredible how they do that. So for sure, there is always a time to come back, to make a comeback. And I would love to settle down, yeah.
Okay, so in your mind, you're like, I have like a real clear future for me. I will do with my career, my personal life,
exactly,
right?
Yes.
This is something you can, figure out right now.
I wouldn't say right now. I mean, it depends how the opportunity changes throughout the years I am in racing. I mean, if I don't really have much of an opportunity and it's just stressing, you know, myself and stressing my sponsors when it comes to the financial situation.
Yeah, yeah, Red Bull, calm down. Yeah. She's still here.
Yeah, it all depends. So if there's no opportunity, then I think it's time to start settling down, start doing a normal job. I would love to open an academy in the UAE for female girls from the ages of 3 to 10, and then even for, and start building them and start educating them in the motorsport world, and then try to move them to Europe to start competing in Europe. I want to start that phase and focus on the younger generation.
It will be amazing.
Yeah, I really hope so.
Yeah. Having family life is important to you?
It's very important to me. I mean, being with my family is already important in it itself. I prioritize them. My brother and my sister are like my best friends. I go out with them. I don't have friends anymore. It's always them. So for me, a family is very important. And I would like to have a family of my own. And inshallah, in the future.
Yes, inshallah. You told me a little bit about your education. Is there something you want to bring to your children, education children, which is really important to you?
Yeah, for me, I would say I would like them to be humble and down to earth. I mean, it's very hard to, I mean, now with the generation that has come, it's very difficult to find someone that's humble. I mean, if they're very spoiled and they have everything, they think they're superior, better than everyone. And I don't want to have kids like that. And I want to raise them that you get what you work for. So if you work for something, then you will get it. Nothing comes easy. Nothing comes for free. That's how I would like to raise them, not to be spoiled, even though if they have a nice house or a nice car. I want them to work for things they would like to have in life. So teach them humble and prioritize working into something to get something.
Yeah, this is so important. Yeah, important value. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because 2 days ago, I was talking about that with my friend. And I was saying, I feel like people now are less humble.
Yes.
Like you have a car, a house, a good clothes or something, just a little bit, you know, and they feel superior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being nice, kind to other is so important. And I mean, this is what we supposed to be as a human.
Mm-hmm.
We hear, but we all will not hear one day.
We all die and we all are buried in the same dirt.
Exactly.
No one is better. I mean, that's how my dad raised me. You want something, you work for it. So that's how he raised me and it made me a better person. I realize how everybody else is. I become an empath to them. I feel how, like, I've put myself in their shoes. And I respect everyone, no matter what their job is, what they do, better than me, not better than me. I don't really care what level they are in life. To me, everybody deserves the same respect and the same generosity.
And speaking of humble people and generosity, if you could change one thing in the world today, what would it be and why?
What would I would change in the world? That's a very good question. I would change the fact misogynistic people,
mm-hmm.
you still see it. No matter how, whatever the year is, it's still out there. There are still people who are misogynistic towards women, no matter what the case is. And I would like to change that in the upcoming future. And just enough is enough. It's just, it's becoming a joke now. And it's just annoying. I mean, they see, let's say, a woman driving a manual car, and then go, oh, she doesn't know how to drive this car. Look, she's stalling. Look at this. Look at this. This is for sure not her car. This is her brother's car or something. I don't like that. I want to change that. And I want it to be like, oh, she drives a manual car. Oh, that's really cool. You know, it's not something like in shock. It has to be normalized now.
Yes, like normalized, of course. Yeah. Amna, you like... You're a very calm and serious person with so many lessons we can learn from you. But I'm sure that you have a fun part, something that people don't really know about you. What can you share about this with us? What is your fun part?
My fun part is I'm very charismatic.
And yeah, for sure.
And I do have like plans, last minute plans, which are really crazy.
Really?
Yes.
What is the last time you did something very crazy?
My last minute plan one time was to, I think it was with my sister. I told her, you know, let's take the buggy and go down the beach.
Yeah.
And the beach is not, you know, it's not the natural beach. It's the man-made beach. So if you put any, like if you put your feet, you will go down like a few meters down. It was the biggest... regret of our life because the car was sinking and we were like, if it sinks, we're done and our dad's gonna kill us and the car is stuck there. And it's
so funny for two drivers. Well,
we were, you know, we were like trying. We got it out. We managed to get it out, but it was full of mud. The whole car was full of mud and we brought it to the house and we were cleaning it very quickly before my dad comes home.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah.
Before he kills us. Now he might see it. He'll be like, which car is it?
Yes. No problem, Dad. It's just a joke.
Yeah, it's just for fun.
So really like action and live experiences, right?
Yeah. It's just in the moment, I'm like, let's go try this. Let's go do this. And my sister, she's like the opposite of me. She's like, no, what if this happens? I'm like, just let's do it. You're overthinking. You're just let's do it. So yeah, I'm the let's do it person. And my sister is the no, what if.
I feel like spontaneous decisions are the best. Best experience, the best souvenir and memories.
Yes,
I agree. I really like it. Yeah. And what do you like to do when you don't work?
What I like to do, I like to just sit in my room, have some tea with my dog, and I watch series, So I'm watching this Korean drama series called Marry My Husband. I'm not sure if you know it.
No? What is it?
It's so nice. It's like about a girl who, she had a really bad husband and she was fighting cancer. And then after she passed away, she had a second chance. She went back in time to fix her life before marrying the guy that was, you know, really bad to her. So it's a really nice Korean drama series. I love it.
Okay, on Netflix?
No, I watched it through a website because it's a Korean TV show and they release the episodes every Monday.
I will check it.
Yeah, it's so good.
So just Netflix, a cup of tea in your room, something very chill and calm. Yeah? Okay. You love a dark romance?
I find it boring. It's now like very... Yeah. You know what's going to happen next. It's so predictable. Yes. So I was like, no, I don't really like it.
And I feel like it's sometimes it's like for youngest people.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, no, it's not the reality, girls. Yeah. Sorry to tell you that. Nobody gonna come with a helicopter and thousands of flowers. And
that's just in the movies. We're putting our expectations too high.
If you have the chance to travel in the past and meet the 10 years old Amna, what kind of advice do you love to give her?
My advice would be to not change herself, to stay the way she is, and not to try to, you know, fit in.
Yeah, okay.
And try to change the way and like hide my culture, hide the way I am. Because when I was young, when I got into racing at 14, I was really embarrassed of my culture. Really? I didn't want to express it to anyone. When I would race in Europe, I didn't want to be looked as, you know, the person from the Middle East. Mm. I wanted to be like, oh, I'm just like you guys. I'm half American. I was born in America. You know, that's how I wanted to portray myself as. But then as the year came, I thought to myself, I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? I should be proud of who I am, where I'm from. I shouldn't really like hide my true roots from everyone else just because I want to fit in. So I would just give my young self that advice and always embrace your roots, embrace where you're from, embrace your Moroccan side, your Emirati side, and never hide it. I was afraid of being unique.
Yeah, this is so important and very difficult at the same time to do in life because we don't have this education, you know. Mm-hmm. Fit in, it's something we always heard.
Yeah, I agree.
At school, at work, everywhere, actually. And for me, this is maybe the most difficult things to do in life.
I agree, yeah.
To embrace who you are, who you really are.
Exactly, yes. It's very difficult. You should never be embarrassed of where you're from. You should, in fact, just embrace it and share your culture with everyone else. I used to hide it. I was like, oh, no, I don't know anything. I'm not like that when I was very young.
Yeah, and now you are comfortable to talk about your culture, your spirituality, something very taboo in France, I would say, really. All this stuff who shaped you as a woman. And this is a very good advice, something very important to share with everyone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even if some women are like older than you or me and don't feel like this, they want to fit in. Mm-hmm. They are very embarrassed because they want to, looks like everybody on social media, for example.
Yes.
And at the same time, I feel like the Arab world and especially MENA region and Middle East are entered in a new era. There is much more opportunities here and people are proud to be a part of this evolution and development. Mm-hmm. I would love to know what is your vision for the Middle East in general, but also Abu Dhabi, Dubai, where you come from.
For me, the vision for the UAE is sports division. I want them to become the best in the world. I want to see a UAE Emirati representative in every parts of sports and not just, you know, nationally, but internationally.
Yeah.
So I want to have, for me, my vision as well is to actually have a racing team, Emirati racing team, from mechanics, engineers, team manager, everything, all Emirati team, and to compete in races in Europe, to compete races like internationally around the world. I want to have that happen. Like, that's a dream of mine. I want to have an Emirati team all around the world racing.
And I will show you will achieve it.
Hopefully one day. And I would like to have, you know, female racing drivers as well competing internationally, not nationally. We need to have more represented, like more representation around the world in different sectors of sports. It doesn't have to be motorsports. I want to see an Arabic representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, everywhere. Golf, tennis, football.
Yes.
Yeah, 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 everywhere. Okay, and what is the most, I would say, Emirati, what do you like the most about your Emirati culture?
Oh, what I love the most about it is we're very welcoming.
Yes, true.
Very, very welcoming. True. We can invite you to our house. Mm-hmm. We don't know you. We just met you. We'll invite you to your house, to our house for lunch and then coffee. And you can stay for 7 hours. You can even sleep over. There's no shame in it.
Yes.
And enjoy our food and have a conversation. Like, my culture, what I love so much about it is we're so welcoming and we invite anyone over. And no matter who you are, we just met you and we just know your name. We invite you over to our house for dinner, for lunch, and just you can spend long hours if you wish. And we won't complain. We wouldn't say, you know, shame on you or anything.
Yes, so. Definitely. And what you love the most about your Moroccan culture?
Oh, the Moroccan culture? What I love the most about it is the family side,
yeah.
The weddings, going when we go to Morocco. I had in 2017 we celebrated Eid and we did the barbecue, the traditional, you know, meat skewers and the barbecue with the whole family together, and we went to Tanja, road trips. So that Moroccan side I really miss and I love. They're very extravagant when it comes to Eid and weddings, and I just enjoy it so much.
And I mean, Moroccan food.
Oh.
One of the best of the world.
The best.
What is your favorite dish?
My favorite dish would be rfisa.
Oh, me too.
Really?
Oh my God, we have so much. Yes. I will die for it.
I know, I die for rfisa. Oh, so
yes.
Good.
But this is very difficult to do, I think. Yeah, it takes time.
It takes a long time, yes.
Yes. My first time was when I was a teenager in Marrakesh.
Oh.
In a good restaurant. The name was Chez Ali.
Chez Ali?
Yeah, oh, wow. Chez Ali. The decoration was amazing. Everything was so good. I was with my parents and my sisters, and they come with rfisa. I was like, what is it? I never tried this, you know. The first, oh my God, this is so good.
Yes, yes.
Forget about pasta, pizza, all this stuff. This one is very dangerous for weight.
I agree. I always eat it all the time. Oh my God, I gained so much weight when I was in Morocco.
Oh my God. Does your auntie prepare this for you?
Oh yeah. She prepares it every Friday for me.
Every Friday?
Every Friday.
Oh my God, you are a lucky girl.
Yes.
Every Friday.
Every Friday. I'm too spoiled. And she told me I'm going to have to teach you because my hands are tired.
Yes. And your favorite sweet from Morocco? Because a lot of cakes.
Oh yeah, there's
sweets
a lot of cakes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Actually, I love the, I don't know the name for it, but you know, it's like a cake.
Yeah.
And then you have to cut it and it's like brown on the inside.
Oh, I don't know this one.
I can't
one.
Remember the name.
Man, no. Auntie, do you have the name?
شو هاي الحلاوة المغربية اللي فيه؟
Avec du miel et des almonds. Ah, with honey and almond?
Yes.
Okay, with honey and almond. No?
عسل والمند. Brewat.
Yes, now I'm very hungry.
Me too. I think I'm going to go to a Moroccan restaurant.
You know one?
Here?
Good one here?
Here, yes, there's a few good ones.
Really?
Yes.
If you have to pick one.
If I have to pick one, there is one called Momo.
Momo, okay.
Yes,
I will
they
try
have really
it.
Good one. here.
They really like put it name in the restaurant, Chez Ali, Momo.
Yes, but I think the traditional one, like the small Moroccan traditional restaurants, are the best.
Yes, of course.
They're always the best.
Yeah. I really want to try also Emirati dessert. Mm-hmm. It's like a little bowl with honey.
Gemat? Yes.
With a cup of tea. I think it will be very good.
Well, Gemat is amazing. Yeah. Yes. It's really good. This you can gain weight also.
Yes, also. I mean, yeah, I have to do some of... work out after that. Amna, I asked you to bring something very special, mm-hmm. something meaningful for you, to share the story behind it. And I'm very excited to know, what did you choose to share with us?
So I have this necklace.
Okay, beautiful necklace.
Thank you. And I always wear it. I never take it off. And it was from a friend of mine. And she gifted it to me a few years ago. And she told me, you know, never remove this necklace because it represents our friendship and everything. And I don't know, it's so meaningful because it's like a symbolic friendship, you know, when you have something with a friend and you used to have like matching bracelets or matching necklaces. For us, we have them matching, so I'm green and she's white. And yeah, it's just so meaningful to me because I've stuck with her for almost 6 years of my life, and she was really a true friend that I had. When I lost racing, I lost everyone as well. Nobody was my friend. Everybody forgot about me. Yes.
Wow.
I literally, it's like when you're something, everybody wants to be your friend. But then when you lose it all, everybody forgets you. Mm. And she was the only person who was there for me throughout that.
At the same time, it's a good filter.
Exactly. Yes. It's also good to know, like, okay, I'm aware of who's my friend and who's not. Yeah. She was the only friend of mine there. And it's really special to me.
Yeah, it's a beautiful necklace.
Thank you.
We don't see it very well right now. Can you?
Yeah.
And green.
Yes,
I love the green. One of my favorite colors.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. What is your friend's name?
Fatma.
Thank you so much, Amna, to share this story with you, with us, sorry, because I know this is something very personal. You told me I don't have many friends. Mm-hmm. I'm very close to my family, but this one, I feel like it's like family to you.
Yes, exactly.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for sharing
for
this
me.
With us.
Thank you.
You know, we have a closing tradition in the podcast, which is the fire question.
Ah, okay.
So I will ask you some quick fire question. You will see it's very fun. And the goal is to ask very quickly, very spontaneous. It takes like 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
Okay, let's go. What is the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning?
The first thing I do is I check my phone.
What was the latest book you read?
Molly's Game.
What is the craziest thing you have done with your money lately?
Ooh, the craziest thing... I bought a new exhaust.
Yeah? But it's worth it.
It's worth it, yes, for sure.
What do you do during moment when you feel really, really down?
What I do is I listen to happy music.
Any bad habits you are trying to kick?
I peel my lips, the skin from my lips.
What is the best advice you have ever received?
If it's meant to be, it'll be.
And the worst advice you wish you didn't follow?
The worst advice is, if they wanted to, they will.
Yeah. What is something you believe in that others find crazy?
What I believe in? Some people find faith a little too much. So when I say like, عَسَنْ تَكْرَهُ شَيْءٍ هُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, they kind of find that like... Mm. Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you okay?
What task do you always procrastinate on?
Oh, what I always procrastinate on when it comes to the gym.
The gym?
Yes.
Me too. What is the one luxury you can't live without?
One luxury I can't live without is AC.
What?
AC.
AC. Oh, yeah. Especially here.
Yes.
Yeah. Where do you retreat to recharge your batteries?
Oh, I go to the beach.
If you had €100 and nothing more, how would you spend it?
I will invest.
Invest in what?
Stocks.
Socks?
Yeah, stocks.
Ah, stocks. Not the same. Oh my god.
That's maybe, yes.
It would be a good investment. Good business. Everybody needs socks.
Yeah.
What is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear is spiders.
Spiders?
Yeah, I hate them.
What bothers you the most about other people?
They walk slow.
Yeah. Very slow.
Yeah.
What do you ask when you pray?
I ask for patience and I ask for success.
What is the most Emirati thing about you?
The most Emirati thing about me is my style, my sense of style.
Oh. And the most Moroccan thing about you?
The most Moroccan thing about me would be my makeup.
Yeah, very good makeup. On point.
Always on point, yes.
When was the most recent occasion you had to tell a lie to someone?
The most recent occasion? In the airport.
In airport?
Yes, I was in Germany. You know how they ask so much stupid questions. And that was the only time I lied.
And it works?
Yes.
Good, yeah, good for you. What's your nostalgic trigger like Proust Madeleine that takes you back to your childhood?
Perfume.
Perfume? Yes. Which one?
There is one perfume from Chanel, number 5, that brings me back to my childhood.
What's your favorite Emirati dish? I mean, you told me.
Yes, ilgemat.
Is there a job you could never, never do and why?
A job I could never do is sit in an office. Mm. I could never sit in a long... I already struggled to sit in class for 3 hours. I can't imagine for 9 hours. So that's a big no for me.
A nightmare.
Yeah.
According to people who are closest to you, what is your greatest quality?
My greatest quality is I'm funny.
And what do you think is your biggest flaw?
My biggest flaw is I talk too much.
What is the last thing you do before going to bed?
The last thing I do is... That's a really good question. I can't remember what was the last thing I did. I'll probably just turn off the lights.
Or check your phone.
Or check my phone. Actually, do my alarm. Yes.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Thank you so much, Amna, for answering all my questions. I have just one more last for you. Okay, this is like a really important question for me because this is why I launched this podcast 6 years ago, actually. So, Amna, what is the biggest lesson you have learned in recent years that you don't learn at school?
Ooh, this is very smart. Very nice question. The biggest lesson I've learned is reality is different. Not everybody you meet is your friend. I learned that the hard way. And not every opportunity you get, you should take. You should always be cautious of every opportunity you will receive. Because sometimes, like, when I used to take every opportunity, it comes with a downside that now it's exclusive to them. And then a better opportunity came and I cannot use that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's always be patient and go with your instinct.
Yeah, such a good listen. Thank you so much, Amna.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed this conversation with you.
Me too.
I felt like, you were my friend.
Me too, yes.
Like it's really natural. And your career, your journey inspired me so much.
Thank you.
And I have to tell you, Amna, I'm very proud of you.
Thank you so much.
From the bottom of my heart. Because I discovered you like a few months ago. I did a video and everybody was amazed by your journey.
Thank you.
And I was like, I wish I can meet her someday because I have so many questions for her. But more than that, you have like a sweet personality, very fun, very welcoming. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Hope we can eat our rifisa together.
Yes, yes. Come to Abu Dhabi. We'll have rifisa.
Okay.
Homemade. Yes, homemade.
Oh my God. I will be so happy. Thank you so much, Amna.
Thank you so much.
Bon, cet épisode touche à sa fin. Merci d'être resté jusqu'au bout. Je vous rappelle que cet entretien a été réalisé ici, au Hyatt Centric Jumeirah à Dubaï, notre partenaire pour cette série spéciale Middle East. Si vous comptez venir ici à Dubaï, n'hésitez pas à venir faire un tour. Je suis certaine que vous n'allez pas être déçus. Ciao!